moral imperative, and these kind of arguments just don't hold any water at all.
Ishan Tharoor, can you talk about having to write the second piece after your first piece went viral on the issue of comparing Syrian and Jewish refugees?
Right. Well, I obviously went viral. It elicited a very strong response from people both sympathetic to what I was saying and also completely animated and angry about what I was saying. And so I felt I had to clarify that the point is not to say that Syria is Nazi Germany, or the point is not to say that Jews and Syrians are identical. The point is not to say that this is a direct reflection of exactly what happened then. The point is very specifically that the exact same rhetoric used by politicians and others, prominent figures in the U.S. in the 1930s, warning against the threat of these refugees, is very, very similar. And the nature of that response, when we think about what these people are fleeing, the fact that these are refugees who are fleeing a horrendous conflict, living in dire circumstances in countries around the borders of Syria, which are straining, really buckling under the pressures and burdens to accommodate them and host them, that this is part of an international responsibility that the U.S. certainly has, that the U.S. has taken up in the past. And that the important thing to remember in this context is that even after the Paris terror attacks, President François Hollande declared very clearly that France will continue to honor its commitment to take in 20,000 Syrian refugees minimum over the next 2 years. This is even in the wake of them suffering this kind of a particular terror attack, which is, for many wrong reasons, equated to the threat of Syrian refugees. So if the French can get over this, the fact that there's such hysteria in the U.S. is remarkable. And the point remains throughout that what's astonishing as well about the past week is that before the Paris terror attacks, the conversation around Syrian refugees in the U.S. was almost the opposite. The question was, why is the USA taking so few, only 10,000 in the next calendar year or in the next fiscal year? And then B, surely things must be done to step up the process to take in more. And now, in the wake of this attacks and the way certain political forces in this country have harnessed have exploited the hysteria around the Paris terror attacks, we're seeing a very, very different conversation.
Ishan and Ilya, we'll have to leave it there. Ishan Tharoor and Ilya Lazovsky will link to both of your pieces. Thanks so much for joining us. We're sorry that Congressmember Ellison couldn't join us. He was on the scene at the attacks in Minneapolis. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Jazz. And this is Jazz. And this is Jazz. And contrary to popular opinion, great jazz in all its forms is still being played and recorded. On Jazz on the Air, every Sunday from 2:30 till 5 o'clock in the afternoon, each week brings a different host with a different perspective on the music, both old and new. Jazz on the Air, Sunday afternoons at 2:30 p.m. on WUSB Stoneby.
Stony Brook Posse, wanna hear fresh. I wanna hear you say yes, I wanna hear you say yes. Long Island Posse, wanna hear fresh. I wanna hear you say yes, I wanna hear you say yes. So all those who wanna hear rock, first gonna hear some fresh.
Fresh music, yes.
All those who wanna feel irate, I can feel fresh.
Fresh music, yes.
When the clock strikes seven on a Friday night, rocking iration gonna make you feel nice. WUSB 95.1 FM. On your FM, the Rasmus, Robert, and Easy Trip, they only bring you
fresh
bluesman culture and reggae music to make you feel
fresh.
All those who wanna hear rock, who's gonna hear it
fresh.
You hear that? Yes, Friday night, 7 o'clock, Rock and Iration. This is WUSB Stony Brook. The time is 6.01 p.m. on a lovely November Tuesday evening. We broadcast WUSB.fm is our streaming site, 90.1 megahertz FM. That's our frequency. Anyway, check us out. Time for Off the Wall. Good evening. Hello.
Good evening.
This is Kyle.
This is Emmanuel.
Hi there, Emmanuel.
I hope excited. We sound better on the air than we sound in our ears.
Well, I can try a couple things.
That's better. Yeah, let's sound like that and assume that we sound this good over the air.
Yeah.
We have a choice. We can either listen to what the headphones interpret the air as sounding like and we sound awful, or we can listen to what we sound like in the board without going to the transmitter at all and assume we sound as good going over the transmitter, which we can't hear.
Correct. And I could sort of hear myself. Anyway, it's why am I even wearing any kind of monitoring devices? But enough production.
This is my beverage.
Details.
I can introduce my beverage to everybody.
Oh, thanks for that.
Yes.
Good to have your amenities on the show,
it's
too.
It's a little bit of joy that I get, and there's not much joy left in this world.
I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, me too.
There's
me
so
too.
Much to talk about. I'm thankful to be whole and being able to do radio with all of you.
Yeah, all of you. Seriously, folks, let's come together and share this moment because I don't know how many more moments like this we'll have. Wow, the world just is, it's in a spiral, and a downward spiral, too. I don't know if this is an upward spiral, if that's even a good thing, but where do we begin? Where do we begin? So many things to discuss, all of which will just get my blood boiling, which also is not good.
There's a lot of it is related.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
if we talk about one thing and end up talking about another thing, I think that's fair at this stage of the game.
We can start with what's going on overseas. We can start with what's going on in Chicago and Minneapolis. We can talk about what's going on here on Long Island. We can talk about the guy who parked next to us in the parking lot. All right, I'm going to keep that off the air. All kinds of things to get upset about.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think your microphone backed off. Just couldn't handle.
I think you just have to touch that little switch a little bit with your hand. Yeah, see, that's how everything works here. You just gotta touch it a little bit,
right.
And either it breaks or
hey,
it fixes itself.
We're both here. Hey, this is cool.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah.
All right.
Little secret techniques there.
But you're right.
No,
you're
the guy I parked next to us, he was a real jerk. But I don't think we should really spend the whole hour talking about that person.
No.
Let's talk about what's going on overseas. Wow, so today, oh man, we went to sleep with this little bit of news happening. Turns out that Turkey shot down a Russian jet that was trying to bomb another country. it's not funny. No, there's nothing funny about this. So far, I think at least three people have been killed.
It's the equivalent to like intersection traffic, you know, but in a bombing campaign. We have people basically trying to have the right of way.
Nassau County, Jericho Turnpike, no traffic lights, and four lanes of cars, and everybody thinks they have right of way. Yeah, something like that.
And all they're trying to do is drop things off and go about their business.
Yeah, got a delivery for you. Here's a little bomb.
It's not like they're staying or occupying that airspace.
Yeah. Well, thing is,
it's a huge deal.
It is a huge deal. What was going on, as far as I can tell, was Russia was over in Syria minding its own business, bombing the Turkmen. Now, the Turkmen are not part of Turkey.
But they're part of...
But they're friends of Turkey because they share four letters.
And yeah.
I think. I don't know. It could be another reason, but...
I think it's a regionalism.
It's probably a more silly reason if they like them for some... Turkmenistan, for instance. Those are the Turkmen, I believe. So anyway... they're over there, they're bombing the Turkmen, but the Turks in Turkey like the Turkmen, and they don't like Russia bombing them. They believe that Russia should be bombing ISIS, Daesh, ISIL, whatever you want to call them. All right, now, Turkey, though, Turkey also likes to go to Syria and bomb, but they prefer to be bombing the Kurds, they're not bombing ISIS or ISIL or Daesh either. And everybody's just going around bombing whoever it is they had an argument with last. And the real problem is festering and new problems are beginning. So now we've got a Russian jet that's been shot down by Turkey's Air Force, which is the most excitement I guess they've had ever. And they claim that Russia went into their airspace and that's why they shot them down. However, the Russian jet kind of landed in Syria. All right, you know, if you're going to shoot somebody down, it should be over your territory, not over another country's territory because they were in your country. You know, you got to shoot them down while they're over your country. That's just how I envision shooting down airplanes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a huge bit of analysis is going on. A lot of people have some questions about that, of the chronology of events, and it's fascinating to see it unfold. And it's weird. Some of the pictures you see, well, the territory, the ridge line, so to speak, looks like a border.
Uh-huh.
There's like lookouts and stuff. So it's very interesting, the different angles and perspectives. And there's a lot of footage of this. Because of cameras and everything everywhere. It's interesting.
There's footage of the plane coming down.
Right.
And now there's footage of the two parachutes and people shooting at the people who've bailed out of a plane. You know, I don't care if it's Hitler bailing out of a plane. You know, your plane is crashing, you're jumping out into the sky with a parachute. You got enough on your mind without people shooting at you as well.
Yeah,
if they're guilty of something, deal with it when they land. Obviously, you could get to them, but that just seemed a bit over the top there.
Yeah, it's fish in a barrel, right? There's so many idioms or phrases that describe that. It's just
this is
unfair.
This is all without Daesh, without Islamic State people, without the terrorists. These are all people that are fighting against the same people.
Well, and I think the important thing to look at is coordination and communication.
Mm-hmm.
Those are critical things going on here. And, I mean, I think the military entities, these states, basically, as they're represented by their militaries and so on, there has to be a little better coordination.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it's like an intersection. Nobody knows when to go or anything. And a bit more planning maybe is necessary. I don't know. I mean, what is...
Well, everyone has their own agenda. That's
yeah,
the problem.
That's it. The conflicting end game, right?
Yeah, we have to agree on what the objective is. And we also have to be a bit inclusive, not make Russia feel like they're always backed into a corner or being humiliated or something like that. What happened to them today was a tragedy. What happened to them a few weeks ago with their airliner was a tragedy. Not enough attention has been paid to that. I mean, excuse me, Paris has been a horrible thing, what happened there, but it was also a horrible thing for all those Russian people aboard the plane that got shot down. Not as much attention has been paid to that. Not as much attention has been paid to what happened in Lebanon. These are all the same perpetrators. So we should be able to unite. Yeah, Hezbollah, we don't like Hezbollah. We think they're terrorists, but guess what? They got elected, and they are the rulers of the country. So we should be working with them for a common objective, and then we can fight later. There's always time to fight.
Yeah, it's interesting in relation to like all the stuff going on in Ukraine and that framing of the Russian military, and now it's about how can we work better with these different entities. But I think there's a social will that has fused a bit. I think the unification, there's sort of agreement on how this looks and what the world, the people around this area, how they feel about these kinds of actions and tactics and so on. And I think it's not quite there with on the enforcement level with militaries and stuff. They're not in solidarity so much because as you said, there's competing agenda,
mm-hmm.
which is not reflective of the immediacy of what's going on. It's sort of, you know, dusting off the file folders on your grievances against these people here or there. And as you said, I mean, at some point you have to act, as Francois Hollande is saying, and many others, despite
yeah.
the differences.
And keep in mind, this is when we all agree on who the bad guys are. We can't get our act together. I'm talking about all of Western civilization can't seem to get its act together and work in a non-divisive way to achieve that objective, i.e. getting rid of these evil people that are hurting so many all over, not just here, not just in Western Europe, but all over the region. And that has to be dealt with. And you don't deal with it by basically trampling over people's rights or making others into villains just because of their associations or their religions or things like that. Going about it in completely the wrong way.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that it's slow. I think we'll build, and their leadership is starting to stand up a bit and point out a direction, but it affects other things.
Right.
Right, because we are in the middle of a huge political season coming up, and it is pretty reprehensible when this stuff gets then taken out of context, and it becomes... People will seize these leaders, or people vying to be leaders, sort of seize the opportunity when we don't have a cohesive voice.
All right. Well, you know,
and
what?
Some decisive direction, as we've repeated.
We've heard so many horrible things being bandied about in the dialogue in this country, as far as the people from that region I can't say I have much hope at this point because, for instance, Donald Trump, I know I shouldn't be giving him the attention, but right now it's no longer funny. It's no longer funny. This guy scares me. The things he is saying are equivalent to what a fascist would say rising to power, basically demonizing black people, demonizing Muslims, demonizing anybody he does not agree with. Saying that violence is okay to deal, you know, you see the thing at the at his rally,
yeah,
where somebody basically decided to be a little disruptive and have a Black Lives Matter shirt, and was basically attacked by people in the crowd, and black guy with a black shirt, a Black Lives Matter shirt, being beaten up by white people, but it wasn't about race. No, it was not about race, but the guy had it coming. And maybe that's the way to deal with situations like that, is to, you know, beat them up a little bit. No, that's basically what he's saying now. And that's sending a message, hey, that's okay. And you know what? Yesterday, last night in Minneapolis, this has not been reported in very many places, 5 protesters were shot by what I consider to be terrorists. Because these white supremacists, not only did they go into a crowd of people and shoot them, they made a video beforehand saying that they were doing things like this. And this is not being reported as an act of terrorism. How is this not terrorism? You know, okay, maybe you can say a school shooting is not terrorism, even though it's the exact same effect. I won't have that debate now. But when you have people going into a crowd that is basically standing up for one political ideology and you believe a different one and you're going to intimidate them by shooting them, that's the epitome of terrorism. So we had a terrorist act in Minneapolis last night. It's not getting any attention at all. Instead, we're freaking out over Syrian refugees and what's happening overseas or what's not happening overseas, and we don't see the evil right below our noses.
Yeah, yeah, and it's beyond belligerence. It is absolutely so completely removed from reality. Like the perception, the ideology, the value they're trying to support is reprehensible. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing as the response we've placed out as a token for numbers of refugees let in.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not approaching. We must. And I've said this before. It's not about appearances, but you must consider how you appear.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the defiance, the belligerence, the I'm right. You don't need to be right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, it's about listening. And I don't know. I think it is xenophobia. It is everything we are against. And
except, Kyle, a lot of people aren't against it. A lot of people are for it. That's what scares me, is the fact that the more Trump says, and he made up all this crap about thousands of Muslims in New Jersey cheering when the World Trade Center was knocked down. He made it up. I have videotape for an entire week of television after 9/11.
Yes.
I'm happy to share that with anyone who wants to look at it. There was no such thing. It never happened. People don't care. He's become more popular than ever. You can just say complete lies. He basically sent out a tweet earlier, which was basically all these statistics, fake statistics, that made black people a lot more violent in his reality, saying that 95% of white murders are done by black people, when it's actually the exact opposite. They're done by white people, and basically spreading this around. His excuse, well, It was a retweet, you know? Someone else said that. I just retweeted it. The fact is he believed it. The fact is he got his followers to believe it, and he's not backing down saying he did anything wrong. He just sent out bad information that was completely fictitious.
Yeah, he has a responsibility. I mean, he has a huge influence as a candidate and so on and so forth. But it's really fear. Uh-huh. It's fear. This is the same stuff Bush was doing. It's just fear.
Yeah, except they're doing it better now. They're doing it much more effectively.
Oh, it's honed.
Yeah,
it's refined a little.
He can put a sentence together. That's what scares me.
Ish.
Yeah. There's not a lot that we can ridicule because it really is getting scary at this point. So when he says that there's thousands of Muslims cheering in New Jersey, people will remember that, and that will become ingrained in our consciousness, and we'll say, yeah, that's what happened, even though that's not what happened. What did happen on 9/11, there was video of people in Palestine cheering and kids being given candy and things like that. And we're talking about a group of maybe, I don't know, 50 people max. That's it. Not thousands, 50 people. And the context was unknown. The context was not known at all as to why they were cheering.
Could have been a wedding.
We don't know. We never found out. We never found out what that was all about. But it was widely reported at the time that Palestinians were cheering. And in fact, that's not the case. Yasser Arafat, I remember, was immediately expressing condolences. In fact, and maybe someone can help me with this, I saw a video of him someplace. I don't have a copy of this, but I saw a video of him giving blood. You know, it was a gesture, probably didn't get to anybody who needed it in New York, but it basically indicated that it was not thousands of people, even tens of people celebrating our tragedy on that day in the Arab world. That just did not happen. But what did happen in New Jersey?
And we were looking for it at the time.
What did happen in New Jersey that day, though? Yes, there were people who were acting suspiciously who were arrested. You know who they were? They were Israelis. And there's a whole story about that. And this is not, you know, a 9/11 conspiracy theory things. This actually happened. There was a LA Times, Washington Post story about it. These guys were doing something. They were acting weird. I wouldn't say they were celebrating, but they were acting strange, and they actually were taken into custody and held for a little while until it was revealed that they were Israeli secret police, and the whole thing disappeared. But that's all that happened in New Jersey. There weren't, I don't think there was a single Arab person jumping up and down and celebrating. It boggles the imagination that he can get away with things like this, and that it's just, yeah, that's, he's just basically making up his own reality.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Conflating facts, conflating stories, history, all of that. But look for it. Look for the fear, the scare tactics, whatever you want to call it. It's there. It's obvious. And they're counting on people to be reflexive and not really understand that this is rhetoric. It serves only to devise. I mean, the concept of we are not great, and it's fear that, who is it? You know, manufacturing or all of these externalities, and he's going to fix them. It is bollocks. It's absurd. Mm-hmm. It is insane. That is not real in entirety. I mean, to say America's not great, we have done a lot of bad, a lot of good. Many, many Western nations
we've
can say.
We've done a lot of things.
Yeah. But what about the potential to be great in the moment, or to look at the greatness that has arisen from real awful circumstances, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, or what we're capable of now, what in this moment is going right? I mean, the premise that it is a complete tailspin, and I mean, I can't accept that as reality. Mm-hmm. And they want us to buy it, that this is as fearful a moment as what was going on right after 9/11. I mean, it's the same exact thing. It's dressed up as it will be this awful negative, right, for these vague reasons, whether it's immigration or jobs or whatever, and that we are not great at all at this moment. Like, we don't have the tools to be great, and it just it makes no sense.
So I have a serious question, and I'd like to ask our listeners this as well. Who is a bigger threat to our nation, Daesh or Trump? And that's a serious question. Daesh being ISIS or Donald Trump. I have my answer. I think indisputably it's Donald Trump. I think somebody like that is a huge threat to this nation, because you put somebody in a position, maybe I should say President Trump. Yeah. You put somebody in that position with that level of ignorance and unwillingness to even acknowledge that you're completely wrong on something.
Obstinance.
And all of a sudden, you've got a really, really dangerous man in a position where he could destroy the entire world. And I think that that dwarfs by orders of magnitude anything that Daesh can do. Anything. Yeah, they can make us be afraid. They can shut down Brussels. Although I think that's pretty ridiculous that Brussels has just been shut down since Saturday and nobody's going outside. You know, they could blow up an apartment building, for God's sake. They don't have to have people in cafes. They don't have to have people in streets. They can blow things up anywhere. It can happen anytime. That's the nature of terrorism. It sucks, but you got to get on with your lives. And I remember the night of 9/11 in New York City, people were outside. And if we had been told stay indoors, nobody would have done it. That's not the way you live. It's you know, it's a sad fact of life that unpredictable things can happen, but you have to stand up to them and not cower in fear. That's what they want, and they're quite happy, I'm sure, that that's what's going on over there, and in so many other places. We can't let it affect who we are, and I think that holds true for anybody in other parts of the world as well. And
yeah,
that's what these guys are saying. You know, when they say things to make us afraid, they want us to change who we are. They want us to treat people differently and to betray our own beliefs. And we're smarter than that, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's also like these trade agreements that there are disagreements about and all that. I do not think any of these people could have done better or would be able to negotiate better. And I think that is not something to stand close to as far as giving me confidence while all the other things that are being thrown out there.
What do you mean, Trump's ability to
negotiate?
Negative.
Yeah, anything like that. I mean, the trade deals with China, all these like discussions about economics, about how badly things are set up. I disagree. I don't trust him anymore because he says that or thinks he has a better concept.
He has proven beyond any shadow of a doubt that he is not competent for this office, and he would be a danger in that office, far more dangerous than any terrorist group, in my opinion. And we need to start dealing with that and not just simply say, yeah, he's saying some things that make me feel better as a person, so I'm going to support him. That's about the dumbest thing you could possibly do. Please, I hope people get to their senses, because this is really starting to scare me now. We've been laughing at this for months, but this is how fascism starts. You know, you basically have somebody that you feel is representing your interests, that does not have the answers, but can certainly rile up a crowd and get the passions going. And then before you know it, you're in a world of hurt, and all kinds of new problems are happening that will take generations to fix.
It's a moment where we need keen understanding of global politics.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a lot of who we've seen so far in some of these debates, they're really not grasping the global nature of the position they're trying to get. And I saw Obama, I see Hollande, I see Cameron, I see these people speak, I see Angela Merkel go play. They understand the job.
Yes.
And they understand the appearance, the stately norms, like the way to behave, the way to interact.
There's stuff going on in their heads. Yeah, we may not agree with all the things they do. We may not agree with most of the things they do, but they are competent. They get it, and they're dealing with it in their way, at least.
I mean, Putin was on TV, and they were saying he was furious. I actually saw the video of him, and him furious doesn't look any different than any other time you've seen a picture of Putin. I think he's just constantly furious.
Yeah, I expected to see a hole in the wall or
do
something.
Do we need a hothead moron with his cabinet of morons dictating this nation? Make us great at what? Yeah. Being morons?
Can you imagine what his cabinet would look like? That would be something, who he would appoint. But listen, let's look at the refugee issue. What Trump is saying is that he's perfectly okay with all Muslims being in some kind of a database where they have to register, or internment camps or whatnot. All kinds of horrible things. And people are like, yeah, that could work, and it's actually being considered seriously. These candidates that you made reference to, I've been looking at them, the Republican side, hoping against all hope that there is a voice of reason, a voice of rationality in there someplace. In the event that a Republican does get elected in 2016, there might be some hope that we'll live in a rational society and not a society filled with hate and fear and all kinds of other horrible things down the road. Let's do it this way. I took the liberty of printing out a little bit on each candidate and how they feel about this particular issue. Why don't you pick one of the candidates, one of the Republican candidates, and we'll see if anybody is basically saying something intelligent and positive.
What is his name? Butterface Crispy? Christie?
Yeah. Chris Christie.
Crispy Christie, whatever his name is.
The esteemed governor of New Jersey.
Sure, whatever.
Okay. No donut jokes, no fat jokes, because we're above that, and because we don't need that. He gives us enough ammunition without us having to stoop to that level.
I'm sorry. I
no, it's okay. Stupid. Everybody does it. And, it's just, it makes me an easy target. I know.
All right, go ahead. Lay it on me.
Well, he was on with Jake Tapper over at CNN the other day. I actually saw this when it was happening. Now, Chris Christie, as you may know, is dead set against letting refugees or Syrian refugees into the United States, and he's a governor. So he's one of the people that has absolutely no authority to let people into a state, but thinks he does. And the majority of governors in this country, all Republican except for one, said they're not going to allow Syrian refugees into their state, even though they have no way to enforce that. Jake Tapper brought up how most of the Paris terrorists were French and Belgian citizens. I believe we brought that up last week, saying that while refusing refugees may be the popular thing to do on the right, quote, "I don't hear you or any of your fellow presidential candidates calling for European citizens to be banned from entering the United States," unquote. Christie's response to this: Jake, how do you know that most of the terrorists are from Europe? How do you know that? I mean, I'd love to know how you figure that one out. This is his response, that a fact that he doesn't jive with his particular view. How did you get that fact? It's a fact. They have the IDs of the people. Yeah. They're French and Belgian nationals. What are you arguing with? That doesn't deal with the fact that that the way you are perceiving it is not the way it is, and that these people were not refugees. They were not coming from Syria. They were in France. They were in Belgium. Maybe they went to Syria and came back.
Oh, but
they were citizens of Europe. So, yeah, what are you going to do about that? And the fact has been brought up many times that the visa waiver program can let in a lot more people than the refugee vetting, which takes 2 years. For some reason, that's not enough. They want it to last even longer than that. It's just so immature that people like Chris Christie cannot accept when there's something that is proving them wrong. He made the same point a couple of days later with regards to letting women and children in. He said, well, that woman in Paris blew herself up. A full 2 days after it was revealed that she did not blow herself up, that someone else in the room did. Yeah, she was one of them, but she didn't blow herself up. How did he not get that fact right? And, of course, he had to debate that particular fact.
Because he probably wasn't following it as closely, or the immediacy of the news cycle is disrupting it. But that tactic, I want to go back, that tactic of questioning the science, questioning the fact.
Yeah, what does scientists...
Opening facts up.
What do scientists know about global warming? Right. I mean, you know, things like
exactly.
that. Just debate...
That's classic.
Yeah, it's debate something that you don't understand. And,
debate the science, the measurement, not the actual result and the impact, perhaps, the cause or source of these... God.
Okay, so that's
who's next?
Chris
next?
Christie. Hang on. Got to rip up Chris Christie there.
Yeah.
All right, so that's he's down. Pick another one.
Oh, Dr. Ben Carson.
Well, we all sort of did Ben Carson, but actually, okay, Ben Carson, he's interesting because he said that he agreed with Donald Trump. Yes, there were thousands of Muslims celebrating in New Jersey. And then he thought about it for a day and said, well, wait a minute. That was actually in the Middle East. That wasn't New Jersey. First of all, how do you get that wrong? How is it that I can remember this? And you can't, and you're running for president. You're a brain surgeon. For God's sake, how do you not know this?
I hear Jersey's a bit rough, though. I mean,
how do you mix up New Jersey with the Middle East? How do you do that? And when you do that, you still get it wrong because there weren't thousands of people. We went over this already. There is no footage of thousands of people jumping up and down over there. There's only that one video of people cheering and having candy in Palestine, and we don't know why they were doing it. So come on, Ben.
Yeah, stay off that bandwagon.
So he agreed with Trump, and then he stopped agreeing with Trump. But okay. he's had his own little gems here. Let's see. He had okay. I'm going to give you a quote here.
Yes.
"We want leaders who are not only smart, but who care about other people. Now, at the same time, we must balance safety against just being a humanitarian. For instance, if there's a rabid dog running around your neighborhood, you're probably not going to assume something good about that dog, and you're probably going to put your children out of the way."
I thought he was...
doesn't mean that you hate all dogs by any stretch of the imagination, but you're putting your intellect into motion, and you're thinking, how do I protect my children? At the same time, I love dogs, and I'm going to call the Humane Society... and hopefully they can
just
come.
Stop. No. God, it's so disgusting.
You got to make it to the end. And they can come and take this dog away and create a safe environment once again. He's talking about refugees, by the way. I don't know if anybody realizes that. He's comparing refugees to rabid dogs. By the same token, we have to have in place screening mechanisms that allow us to determine who the mad dogs are.
Uh-huh.
Quite frankly, who are the people who want to come in here and hurt us and want to destroy us? Until we know how to do that, just like it would be foolish to put your child out in the neighborhood knowing that that was going on, it is foolish for us to accept people if we cannot have the appropriate type of screening. I don't think it could be any clearer. Don't let your children out unless you know where all the dogs are and know that they're not, any of them are rabid, because dogs are really out of control.
I totally stopped paying attention.
Well, that's what he's counting on. Yeah, people will stop listening.
Another classic technique.
He has no grasp of reality. He just says things to hear what they sound like, I think. So no, you're not going to find any sense there. I'm sorry. Next candidate, please.
RuPaul.
Try again.
Rand Paul.
Rand Paul. All right. RuPaul. Okay, Republican presidential candidate Rand Paul. He actually got a shout out in 2600 because of his stance, standing up for
filibustering stance,
filibustering digital rights, things like that.
Heck, you
know, he gets it right every now and then.
Yes,
it's kind of refreshing. Maybe this is the winner here. Well,
opportunistic as it is,
he said the brothers who bombed the Boston Marathon in 2013 were coddled after they arrived in America. This is in response to the question of refugees. The Boston bombers came here as refugees, he said. We coddled them. We gave them free stuff. We gave them free housing. And yet they decided to attack us. Well, turns out they weren't refugees. They came to the United States from
Kyrgyzstan?
No, it's the one K-Y-R-G-Y-Z. How do you say that? I think I know how to say it, but I don't think I can say it. Yeah, okay. They came from that country on temporary tourist visas, and they then applied for and were granted asylum, claiming they faced oppression as ethnic Chechens. Now, applying for asylum in the United States is very, very different, and as I mentioned before, it takes up to 2 years. Now, the Sarnoff family received government assistance. The father of the family suffered from what was diagnosed as PTSD, mental health issues, after he was beaten with a steel pole outside of a Brighton restaurant in 2009.
Ouch.
He got food stamps and assistance for the next couple of years. So Rand Paul's completely wrong as far as basically saying that these guys were refugees and using this as a way to say that refugees are dangerous. He also said, "Make no mistake, we have been attacked in the past by refugees or by people posing as refugees. The two Boston bombers were here as refugees." He won't let go of that fact, even though it's not a fact. "They didn't take very kindly to what we gave them, education, food, clothing, and they chose to attack our country." The U.S. Senator from Kentucky pushed for a vote last week that would have banned new refugees from Syria and about 30 other countries from receiving any government assistance or welfare. So basically, you know, those ones who are here, let's not give them any support or help whatsoever so that they can get nice and angry at us as well, you know, and maybe make these things come to fruition. So no, I'm sorry, Kyle, but Rand Paul does not get any points here either. Pick another candidate. There's plenty of them.
Tom Cruise.
Are you just going to get them all?
Oh, I'm sorry, Ted Cruise.
We, like I said, we have enough to make fun of. We don't have to make fun of their appearances or their names or anything like that. Let's see. No, that's the wrong one. No, that's wrong too. So we got here. Nope. Hold on. There's still quite a few candidates.
Is Pataki still at
nine? No, Pataki. Well, out. He's either out or no one's paying attention anymore.
Right. Right. What about Maryland?
No, I'm looking. You fill some time while I try and figure out which is which here, because they sort of merge together. Here we go. I found Ted Cruz. Okay. He says Muslim refugees from Syria should go to other Islamic countries. He believes that Christian refugees from Syria pose no risk to American security. The rising presidential candidate is aligning himself with the most restrictionist voices in the debate over how to handle the refugee crisis. He has applied a religious test to judge which refugees to admit, in the words of the White House, telling reporters across South Carolina this weekend that he would admit all persecuted Christians to the U.S., but no persecuted Muslims. Yeah, should I go on? You think there's some hope here that he's going to make any sense? He said, there is no doubt we would need to vet anyone coming in, but there is no indication that we have Muslims pretending to be Christians in the coming refugee wave. If that develops to be a problem, he has a plan for this too, then our first obligation should be protecting our national security. He just basically goes on saying all kinds of horrible things. And the religious test is really pretty outrageous. In fact, even drew the scorn directly of President Obama.
Right.
He called out Cruz by name at a press conference, said his position was not American. I have to agree.
Yeah.
And of course, what's Cruz's response to this? It's not surprising that President Obama is attacking me personally. I'll tell you what is shameful is that we have a president, after 7 years, still refuses to utter the words radical Islamic terrorism. Why do these Republicans, why are they so fixated on that phrase? I'm more curious about that. Why do you think they want to hear people say radical Islamic terrorism?
Because it's a religion, because it embroils the acts we're seeing with the faith.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it adds a little bit of hatred and makes you say, yeah, the Muslims are behind it all.
Right. Gives it that religious edge.
Mm-hmm.
So you're immediately going to this vast and very long lasting tradition without question.
Yes.
It's a complete oversimplification, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much. And it's nationalistic. It's anti-religion. I mean, you could...
The test thing sounds like McCarthyism, like finding communists and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, you know, putting you to test over what you believe and questioning your beliefs. This from the party that, as we said a couple minutes ago, questions the facts.
Next time there's some right winger that comes out and shoots a lot of people, like last night in Minneapolis, for instance, are these guys going to say radical Christians? Are they going to say that? Because most times that's what it is. Are they going to talk about the Jewish aggression in the Middle East when the Palestinians are bombed next? Because that's the equivalent of what they want Obama to keep saying. Because that targets people, that spreads hatred, that says, oh, you know, makes you think those dirty Jews, what they're up to now. This makes you think, oh, those horrible Muslims, what are they up to now? That's why they want you to say phrases like that, because it objectifies people, it labels them in a particular way. And I think the way that this has been presented to us is accurate. These are terrorists. These are people who belong to this organization, whatever you want to call them. And I've chosen to call them Daesh, as it's referred to in the Muslim world, because saying Islamic State basically helps people like this. It helps them say, yeah, it's Islam that's the problem. And Islam is not the problem. It has a problem. It's facing a horrible problem right now, one that we're not making any better. But the religion itself is not the problem. And, you know, religion itself causes all kinds of problems, and there are all sorts of things within it.
Yeah, it's not a panacea of getting the right one.
Right. And it's very simplistic to say, yeah, religion is the problem. Yeah, you really think that just getting rid of religion is going to solve this? I have one word for you, Stalin. It won't. All right, so that's it for Tom. Tom ain't got me saying it. Ted Cruz.
Thank you for that.
All right, we're running out of candidates, but we're also running out of time. So let's go through the remaining ones quickly. Any favorites?
Gosh, who's left?
There's a few left.
We already did Trump.
Yeah, we're not going to do Trump again. We gave him enough time.
All right. Carly Fettuccine.
Really? Every candidate you're going to do this to? Okay. Well,
Fariano.
I got to admit, I held out some hope for her because just watching all these people basically saying these stupid things in the last week or two, I didn't see her. Didn't see her doing that as much or at all, really. Maybe she just wasn't getting any press attention. And I couldn't really find specifics. I'm gonna just basically tell you something she did say. It outraged atheists, and it kind of speaks to what I was saying just now. She is basically saying, I'll read the quote. "I do think it's worth saying that people of faith make better leaders because faith gives us humility," she said. "Faith teaches us that no one of us is greater than any other one of us, that each of us are gifted by God. Faith gives us empathy. It gives us the belief that there is something better, that there is someone bigger than all of us. And so I think that it's important that we elect a leader of faith who knows that more prayer, not less, is necessary in public life and in all our lives." I mean, come on. Does she not know that faith is what's behind all these horrible acts in the first place? Maybe it's not your faith. Maybe it's someone else's faith. But I guess you're saying that your faith is the one that should be elected to high office and is more qualified than anybody else. Kind of exactly the opposite of what the damn country was founded upon in the first place. So, yeah, there's a lot of a lot of ignorance there.
Remember, we're protecting the lack thereof.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, not any one specific faith.
Anyway, I did find this, though. She had a meeting with the New Hampshire Federation of Republican Women in Concord, New Hampshire, on the 17th. She questioned the demographics of those fleeing the terror in Syria. The photos of mothers and their children provoke sympathy, she said, but they don't show the truth. The vast majority of these refugees are young, able-bodied men looking for work. Yeah. So
that's the economic refugee economic immigrant, I believe is what you say.
Yeah. The vast majority of refugees leaving Syria, she said, are able-bodied young men. So this website known as PolitiFact decided to check that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. What'd they find?
They found, they said, let's start by leaving out the other qualifiers, young and able-bodied, and look at whether the vast majority of refugees are men. We need not split hairs on what constitutes a vast majority here, since the gender breakdown is pretty evenly split in hard numbers. The majority of refugees is actually female. And if you look at only the male refugees, which amounts to 49.7% of the total, less than half of that population is age 18 or older. Men aged 18 to 59 comprise about 22% of all Syrian refugees. And contrary to Fiorina's statement, most refugees overall are children aged 17 or younger. I'll say that again. Most refugees are children aged 17 or younger. Now, Jaffrey Mock is a Syrian country specialist for Amnesty International. Explained the situation of Syrian refugees. He said the sort of refugees that Fiorina was talking about, young, able-bodied men, would be given a low priority for settling in the United States. Obama recommended in September that the country take at least 10,000 refugees in the next fiscal year. The priorities go to torture survivors, people with serious medical conditions, children and teens on their own, and women and children at risk. So basically, this website rated Fiorina's claim false.
bogus.
Yeah, she doesn't get it either. Does not get it either. And, you know, basically saying that we're going to take 10,000 people in the next however many years and all the furor this has caused, this discussion. Let's compare it to a couple of things. Our neighbors to the north, Canada, we saw a piece just last night. They're taking 25,000 Syrian refugees by the end of this year.
Mm-hmm. Almost 30,000, I think, too.
And the big debate there
keeps going up.
Is where are they going to live? How are we going to take care of them? And they're being integrated into the Canadian healthcare system.
Yeah, there's planning going on. Imagine that.
I'm not seeing a debate about we shouldn't be taking these people in. I'm not seeing a debate in France. I'm not seeing a debate in Germany. I'm not seeing a debate in most Western European countries. And they're taking far more. It's really kind of silly to see the numbers. Germany taking 800,000. United States, 10,000. We're so much bigger, and they're taking them this year, and we are debating whether we should take them at all over the next few years. So I'll just call if you're in. I'm ripping up here.
Marco Polio.
All right. All right. So we got here. Yeah. Nope. That's the wrong one. Let's do a couple left. What does Marco Rubio actually think about Syrian refugees? Well, once upon a time, back in September, he wanted to admit Syrian and Iraqi refugees because that's what America stands for. But that was before the Paris massacre. He didn't seem much affected by the murder of passengers aboard the Russian jet shot down over Sinai or the bombings in Beirut the day before the Paris horror. But since then, he said he doesn't want to let Syrian refugees into the country at all, or that he wants to sort them out by religion, or that he wants to vet them even though they're already vetted, or that he wants to separate them out by age and gender and whether they are leaders of approved religious sects. Rubio said, "My argument is that we can't allow anyone into this country that we can't vet, and I believe that the vast majority of refugees that are trying to come here are people we will not be able to vet." That's not really true, but it's not the worst thing about Mr. Rubio's comments, and this is from a piece on the New York Times. "Does common sense still apply?" he asks. "Of course it does. A 5-year-old orphan, a 90-year-old widow, a well-known Chaldean priest, these are obviously common sense applications, and you can clearly vet them just by common sense." So this columnist says, let me see if I have this right. "A 5-year-old who has no parents can be led into the United States as a refugee, but not one who has living parents. Would Mr. Rubio allow this child's mother in, but not her father, leaving aside for the moment the fact that plenty of terrorists are women? Would a 90-year-old woman whose husband was still living qualify for refugee status, or would that be reserved for those whose husbands are dead? The answer, sadly, is that Mr. Rubio has no idea what he's talking about." So much for him. Are we out of time? Are you giving me a... oh, my God. Wow. Well, I didn't even get through all the rest of the candidates.
Who do we have left? Who's left? John Kasich. No, Bobby Jindal's out.
John Kasich wants Judeo-Christian values to be emphasized. And Jeb Bush believes that you can prove yourself a Christian very easily, and those are the people we should let in. And Huckabee is accusing Obama of wanting to make Americans memorize the Quran. You know, going through this list, going through all these candidates, what they're saying, I realize the Republican candidates, they're all assholes. I'm sorry, folks. I don't like to use that word, but I've been searching all day for another word to use, and I can't think of one. Please help me. What other word is there for these people? They just are so horribly, aggressively clueless and dangerous, because if they get into power, imagine the kind of world that we're going to be looking at. Oh, Lord.
Yes, they'll know we're Christians by our bombs.
All right, listen, we're out of time, but write to us, otw@2600.com. This week is Thanksgiving. A lot of you are coming home. And I guess this is a good enough song to play for those of you going home to your old house with your parents and dealing with these kinds of conversations. See you next week.
Flying east on a plane, drinking all that free champagne. I guess I saw this coming down the line. And I know it should be fun, but I think I should have packed my gun. Got that old suburban showdown in my mind. Sit around with the folks, tell the same old tired jokes. bored to death on Sunday afternoon. Mom and Dad, me and you, and the outdoor barbecue. Think I'm gonna hide out in my room. I've been gone for a while, made some changes in my style, and they say you can't go home anymore. Well, the streets all look the same, and I'll have to play the game. We'll all sit around in the kitchen chairs with the TV on, with the neighbors there. Out in the yard where my dad works so hard, he never lets the crabgrass grow too high. Place hasn't changed, and it's why I'm gonna feel so strange. But I have to face the music by and by. Drive into town when this big bird touches down. I'm only coming home to say goodbye. Then I'm gone with the wind, and I won't be seen again till that great suburban showdown in the sky. Till that great suburban showdown in the sky.
With you, Finn's Revolution until 9 p.m. tonight. The guys from Huge Large will be on the air with us just very, very shortly. And also new music from Daria Grace and the Pre-War Ponies.
plus brand new music from the Velvet Underground. Stay tuned.
You're like
Daria Grace and the Pre-War Ponies right here on their brand new release. And we were just listening to the vinyl edition of their brand new release, Get Out Under the Moon, when it first was released. Digitally, we played some stuff and did some interviews with Daria. But I got to tell you, the sound of this vinyl record is absolutely amazing. So maybe we'll use some as a premium a little later tonight. And we are in, of course, funding mode right here at WUSB Stony Brook. So give us a call at 631-632-6901 if you dig what you hear. And I promise I'll hook you up with something. In just a few moments, we're going to have both Rob and Matt from Huge Large. That's right, Huge Large. I'm not kidding. It's all one word. On the air with us just a few moments. And let's hear a little something from them right now. This is called Sometimes Good Guys Don't Wear White, right here on WUSB Stony Brook from Huge Large, who'll be on the air with us in just a moment. Stay tuned.
Don't wear white. Yeah. Every day, baby, I work hard. And it's true at night, I spend the restless time. All those rich kids and all their